Well, hello again, and welcome to The Gaming Guru, sponsored by Augustine Casino, the podcast that gives you an insider's perspective as we look behind the scenes in the world of casinos and gaming. In this episode, we're going to continue our discussion about innovations in the world of gaming, not only looking at the technology on the casino floor today, but also at some exciting new developments coming in the future. And to help us discover the very latest innovations in gaming, somebody who can certainly give us an inside look into the casino world, the general manager of Augustine Casino, Jeff Bauer. And Jeff, on the last episode of the program, we talked about sports betting and some of what we can expect in that area as sports betting becomes more widespread. Now let's move to the casino floor and talk about not only slot machines, but table games as well. I lived on the East Coast, and so I didn't have a lot of access other than Atlantic City to a casino. And just from that point to now, I mean, when you walk in and you see the slots floor, it looks massively different than it did years ago. And I imagine that the trend is going to take it even further in the future.
Yeah, there's a lot of innovation, and there has been in gaming for, I'd say the last 20 years has been kind of a explosion in technology, just like everything. I mean, you know, who would have ever thought of an iPhone back in 1999? Well, I mean, there was a couple guys that were thinking about it. But yeah. The rest of us had no idea, right? And I thought my pager was pretty friggin' cool. But now, slot machines are going down that same road. When I first got in the business, again, I'm saying the old days, we had these kind of beautiful, almost works of art from a metal standpoint. We had these silver games that had the fruit that spun around on three mechanical reels. They weren't plugged into anything. They were just mechanical. And then if you hit something, money would kind of spill out into this little cup that was like almost like a Wendy's change dispenser. And you had dime machines. I had this whole floor of Pace, was the brand, dime slot machines at Harrah's Reno. I used to walk past them every day and just think how kind of like almost 50s sci-fi looking they were. But those games were on the floor since 1945.
Wow.
And it was 1987. So the lifespan on those games already had been 42 years, and they stayed on the floor for several more years. That was the old model for slot machines. You bought a slot machine, and then you just made money with it for 40 years.
Yeah.
Today, casinos have to refresh their floor, at least 10% of their floor every single year.
Wow.
Games have a shorter and shorter and shorter lifespan, kind of like your iPhone. Mm-hmm. Manufacturers have learned like, oh, we want to make sure these games are obsolete in like 2 years, so you have to buy new ones. They are very expensive. The lifespan of a slot machine today is anywhere from 6 months to, if you have a really good one, two, maybe 3 years.
Really?
And then a phenomenal game might last 3, 4, 5 years, but that's it. And if you walk into a casino floor that has games older than 5 years, you're walking onto a dead casino floor. There won't be any people there.
Huh.
We're constantly reassessing. What are the games? What's new? And every year there's a gaming show in Vegas. If you're in Indian gaming like we are, there's a National Indian Gaming Association show every year. Mm-hmm. You have to get in there and meet with all the manufacturers and find the hottest new games. They're bigger. The games are like infinitely larger today. They have 50-inch curved monitors. You know, back in the day, it was just a 12-inch screen, and it was a little blurry, and you kind of, you know, even on video poker, like it was kind of the cards were burned into the screen, and it was just that, and those games would be on the floor for 20 years. So that's really what's changing is just how short the lifespan of a game is. So you'll put, for example, a Michael Jackson game a few years ago. It came out, everyone was so excited about it. Oh my God, Michael Jackson game. Michael Jackson had a very long, you know, he's still super popular, his music's popular. Mm-hmm. Slot machine, not so much. You know, that lasted about a year and a half and it died. Same with Frank Sinatra, same with Elton John, same with Britney Spears, all these kind of slot machines themed on these musical giants. They are always so exciting when you get them on your floor and everyone lines up and plays them and they go, meh, we can find a different
game.
One of the things that's really kind of hot, that's getting hotter every year are these Asian themed games. And Asian themes have panda bears and, you know, koi fish and all these symbols of luck that somehow really appeal to everybody across ethnicities. And it's really kind of a cool trend. One of the hottest games on the floor right now is called Dragon Link. And it's dragons, obviously, with a linked jackpot system. And those games tend to be played 5 to 10 times more than any other game on the floor.
Interesting.
And those games have been on the floor for a couple of years now. So it's like these huge like group participation games that are linked together with huge jackpots that can be won with a 50-cent bet. It's really interesting. They hit a lot. So they're very hot games. So, hey, anybody who's listening, go play Dragon Link. They win a lot. And a lot of these other linked games, Locket Link, Lucky Link, this Hispanic favorite, Loteria, these games are following the same model where they have multi-level jackpots. You can win the mini jackpot. It could be $27, or you can win the maximum jackpot, which could be like $27,000. Mm-hmm. They hit all the time. And so they get played a lot, and they get a lot of the cycle through a lot of jackpots because of that. So that's some of the new innovation. The really innovative innovation seems to be coming on the skill-based slot machine side. They're almost like arcade games. Like you might take an 80s arcade game like Galaga and turn it into a slot machine.
Interesting.
So as you're shooting down the spaceships, every time you hit a machine, it's almost like a hit a spaceship with your laser beam, it spins a reel. It's a random number generator comes up. So you might have won 10 cents, you might have won $10.
Oh, wow.
And you're just shooting down all these aliens and winning money or winning, not winning money, but the game is more, it's more suited towards a gamer who's maybe interested in being good at something other than just kind of pushing a button and seeing if I won. So those games are becoming more and more prevalent, and there are several companies out there. One that we're associated with, Synergy Blue, it's actually owned by the tribe that we work for. They have games in several different countries, Austria, England, I think Australia, the United States. We have a few of their games at Augustine Casino. There's a lot of different kinds of themes. They have basically a version of, it's called Lucky Kart, but it plays like Mario Kart, and you're driving in a, you're sitting down driving the game, and as you're getting the coins, you're winning different various amounts of money. They have a lot of different games like that. That is something that I think is appealing to, you know, now that technology's advanced on the gaming side. We talked about esports. The people that are now, you know, my generation or a little younger kind of grew up on these older arcade games. Yeah. Like I used to go to the arcade when I was a kid and play Asteroids Deluxe or, you know, Pac-Man. Those games were all new. Now they're turning into games of chance in a casino. And so the demographic of that person who's in their 50s or 40s or even early 60s, that appeals to them. So it's not necessarily going after a younger crowd, but is appealing to the younger, older crowd that maybe doesn't just want to play a slot machine.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at.
But the second you started to describe those, I was thinking, I need to get out there. I'm going to go play some of them. It sounds like it's fun.
Exactly. Exactly.
But obviously that goes back to what we were just talking about with esports again.
Right.
And it loops it back in where now if you've got somebody who's good at that, well, now they've got a different outlet for it where, let's face it, you know, you watch TV and you see one of those esports competitions, you see a tournament. I mean, I'm not going to be playing in that.
Right.
You know, I'm not anywhere near good enough to play in that. But if I can go down to the casino and there's something that's a little bit more than, like you said, just hitting the button or pulling the lever, which, by the way, I love pulling the lever.
Yeah. There's almost no levers left.
I know. It's hard to find one with a lever. Exactly. But whenever I find one, I never hit the button. I always hit the lever.
Yeah.
But going back to one of the other things that you said about the linked machines, that's an interesting concept too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that that makes a game more popular. Actually, let's back up one beyond that. And when you go to these shows, how do you determine what is going to be a popular game and what's not going to be a popular game?
Right.
So, and what's going to be a popular game for a long time and what's just going to be, you know, a 6-month hit?
Sometimes it's... Pardon the pun, it's a roll of the dice.
Right, right.
But you're taking, you know, there's obviously the folks selling you who have a lot of knowledge because they sell to a lot of places and a lot of different gaming jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
So what is also interesting about that is that in Colorado, a game could be super popular on the floor and you could bring it to California and it would just be a dud.
Really?
And it's really interesting how temperamental the gaming public can be about a type of game. It may have more appeal in one location over another. Nevada games don't always play in other states, but I think what we do is we go to the gaming shows, we play all the games, and there are hundreds of them on the floor, and we talk to the sales reps, and we talk to other, because all the other casinos are there too, globally, other casinos from all over the world, and they're talking about, oh, I have that game in my jurisdiction. It may not be legal in yours yet. It hasn't been approved. So you got to get it though, because it is killing it on our floor. So we, you know, there's that sort of networking, word of mouth that helps us make determinations. sometimes, like my slot director, Mark Mormon, he's been in the business 35 years. He's got a pretty good gut on what games play well and will have legs. Other times we trust our wives who may play slots and they're like, would you play that, honey? I'm like, oh my God, that's a great game. So then you're going, let me pick that brain a little bit. And so I'm not a slot player. So I've always been on this side of the counter. Mm-hmm. I think that watching customers, you know, preferences and talking to people and then, you know, you kind of weigh all of this and say, yeah, I think I'll take a shot with this game. But when you're buying a slot machine, they literally cost anywhere from $18,000 to $26,000 a piece.
Wow.
So you don't want to make bad decisions very often or you won't. Like I said, the lifespan of a GM can be short.
Yeah.
So it's like any coach or any GM in the world. If you're not making good decisions, you're not going to be sitting in that seat very long.
Well, I imagine that where you are, it would, I wouldn't say make it easier, but it would help because it allows you to be more in touch with your audience, more in touch with your clients that are coming in the door.
We know our customers, as I mentioned earlier, very well. Our marketing team is every single day on the floor talking to customers and they'll tell us if they don't like something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we have this saying, you know, they vote with their feet, they vote with their dollars. You know, they'll tell us, and we'll look at this report and say, oh, this game has literally made no money in a year. We need to get rid of it and get something in. And sometimes we have a game like Dragon Link where we put four on the floor and the lines to play it are literally backing up. And so we go, let's get four more. And games like Dragon Link are a type of game that, you know, we love the game, we love how they do, but we can't actually purchase them. And that game would probably be $50,000 if you could buy it because it's so immense and gorgeous. But what the manufacturers learned a long time ago, just like a lot of tech companies, is if I can lease it to you or get you on a payment plan or share in the revenue somehow, it's actually more lucrative for them. They'll make more money charging us 20% of the revenue in a fee than they ever would if they just sold it to us. So a lot of our games now, the best games on the floor, are what we just call leased games, participation games. The manufacturer participates in the success of the game.
Now, if you go that route, like you have, then how much control does the manufacturer have over the settings on the machine and how often it pays off and, you know, and how attractive in turn that is to the person walking in the door?
Yeah, so there are two different types of games, and that's a great question. The two different types of those leased games. One is called a participation game, which we just talked about, where the manufacturer might charge you 15% of all revenues off the game, and you just pay that. And you get an option of setting the machine at, say, five or six different levels of payback. So you can set the game at 88% payback, which means the house keeps 12%, and of that 12%, 15% goes off to the manufacturer.
Right.
So the math starts to get a little crazy. Participation games in general are, the payback is gonna be lower than on just a game that is owned by the casino. And in our case, we set all of our games very loose, meaning high payback, typically around 94-95%, and on video poker, 98-99% payback. So when you have a participation game that is paying back 90%, and we set ours pretty loose as well, because we can, and so we actually make less money than say a strip casino in Las Vegas. They would set theirs at maybe 85-84%, even 82% payback.
Wow.
Meaning they're keeping 18%, and the reason for that, if you think about the psychology of that, is the customer is coming in staying for 3 days. You're not going to see him again for 1, 2, 3 years.
True.
So if they fleece you a little bit on the strip, they don't feel that bad about it.
Right.
But if I have to look you in the eye every single day, I will feel pretty bad about it. So we, in order to keep our business and the value proposition that Augustine, the tribe, set out, we set our games at the loosest or second loosest setting allowed on the game. So in other words, the highest payback.
Yeah.
Or the second highest payback. And usually there's up to 8 or more options. We set it at the very top. And that's just how Augustine has always run. I came in 7 years ago, 2013. I've never changed that. I don't deviate from it. It's a brilliant strategy. Someone else way before my time set that up, and I agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
The other type of leased game that I wanted to tell you about is called a WAP, W-A-P, Wide Area Progressive. It's also linked, and the manufacturer actually sets the percentage and the payback because it has to be the same. It's linked at other casinos.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So in our case, we're linked with other tribal casinos. Mm-hmm. You could be sitting at a tribal casino in North Dakota. You're playing on the same progressive jackpot that you are in Southern California. So for example, Megabucks in the Indian gaming world is linked across state lines to other tribal casinos. And the jackpot is then fed by every single dollar that goes in. They might kick 2 cents to the meter. But you'll watch that meter spin. And if you're in Nevada, it's linked at every casino in Nevada, and it's moving pretty fast. And a jackpot now gets up to $18, $19, $20 million before it hits. But those games are set pretty low on the payback side because so much of the money is going into the meter. So the money, the machine still pays back at a 85%, but it's almost all in that $20 million jackpot.
Right.
So you're not getting not getting these $100 and $200 hits regularly. You're pretty much, you play that game, you got $200, you're either going to win big or lose $200.
Right.
And so, but you kind of take that risk because you're playing, it's like the lottery.
You're playing for more money.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
So there's different types of games, different types of paybacks, but that game, the house really doesn't control the payback percentage as much as all the other games on the
floor. And this is fascinating because, whenever you walk into a casino and you sit down and you put a couple of bucks or you put a couple of coins into a machine, you always think, oh, my chances must be so small. I don't even know why I'm doing this. But, I mean, those machine payback percentages are much higher than I would have expected them to be.
Yeah, and it's not true everywhere, but it is true at places like Augustine that deal in repeat visitation from locals. Mm-hmm. And while those payback percentages seem higher than maybe other places, what they tend to do is give a person with a $100 bill more time on the game, right? Yeah. You play longer because you're getting fed back some of the money you put in. So you get respins basically for your money a lot at a higher payback percentage. It doesn't mean you're guaranteed to only lose 2% of your money. That isn't what the payback means. And we probably don't even have enough time to discuss the math on how that works, but it does allow more time on the game and a better chance to win. So more people win more jackpots. At our little place, we have a small casino. We have about 750 games. Last year, we paid over $17 million in hand-paid taxable jackpots, which that would be a number that you might see at a large casino. It's rare to have a small casino pay that much in jackpots. Hmm. We are extremely loose. When I say that, you know how long I've been in the business, 33 years almost. This is the loosest slot floor I've ever worked on in my life.
Now, how does the technology, do you guys have table games?
We
there?
Do. We have a small table pit, only 8 games.
And how does the technology then eventually transfer, if it hasn't already, to table games?
So yeah, there's a lot of ways. One is in the actual tracking of the chips that you bet with. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these different chip systems now have what they call RF within the chip. So they can actually read the chip denominator. The table reads the bet. And so that the tracking of the wins and losses by the table games management is a lot easier to do, because table games is one of the old school, it's been around a long time, and we literally eyeball the bets and we say, oh, it looks like his average bet is $20 and he's been playing for an hour, so let me log that in. And now then we give you what they call a rating as a player. Mm-hmm. And so if he or she is betting for $20 a hand for an hour, then that comes in as about a that you can kind of assume that's going to be about a $20 piece of revenue. You're on average going to keep one bet worth of revenue off of a table game, a blackjack game over an hour course of action. So that's kind of how the math works on that. And so when we judge a player's value from a financial number, that's how that's done. If you have actual chips that are counted and read by the table, you get more precise readings.
Sure.
So I could be varying my bet from $5 to $50 and anywhere in between, depending on how I'm doing. And the table itself will actually note every single one of those bets, just like a slot machine does. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, table games weren't really precise that way. So there's that technology piece. There's also the piece in the way cards are shuffled and dealt now. Mm-hmm. They are auto shufflers that you can buy or lease from manufacturers, and that take kind of the the time-consuming job of shuffling multiple decks of cards at a time, like six decks at a time mm-hmm. or eight decks at a time, that can take up to 4 or 5 minutes for a newer dealer to shuffle. The auto shufflers are always shuffling. They're constantly shuffling, and they're spitting out the eight decks at a time, and then you put them in your shoe, and you just keep going. The game doesn't really have much downtime.
Yeah.
It also ensures that the shuffles are fair and honest, as opposed to you human error on table games. You could always be stacking the deck, rigging the deck.
Sure.
There's a lot of ways to cheat table games.
That by the way, needs to be an entire episode.
I was just going to say that.
Because that would be fascinating to know from your perspective,
yeah.
the types of things that you've seen, and then without giving away too much, obviously, what the casinos do to help mitigate that.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I won't go into it too much because you're right. That's an entire show on its own. But it is enough to say that even at Augustine Casino, we have hundreds of cameras
mm-hmm.
and a surveillance department that is nothing but watch
the
cards and the industry is so heavily regulated that we're required to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most people even realize that this is another topic for a show later. how regulated the industry is and how much you're vetted as an employee in the industry.
Oh wow!
And
wow.
Now the federal government is requiring more of us as we report on where the money's coming from. So if a customer comes in with $10,000, we have to fill out a currency transaction report. We have to where we think the money came from, and all that kind of stuff is there. It has happened since 9/11 and the Patriot Act and all that. The IRS and the federal government wants to know more about money. They treat us like we're a bank more than we're like a house of fun.
Interesting.
And from my side of it, for example, when I'm the key license holder for a casino, like I was at my last job in Northern Nevada, I was running a casino in Tahoe. The background check on me ran for 8 months.
Wow.
And was tens of thousands of dollars to the company that got me licensed, and was so invasive that even two state gaming agents came to my house and looked in my closet at my safe and had me open and they wanted to log all the contents of my personal safe. So imagine that kind of, you're going in for a job and you're like, everything you've ever done is on display for them. I've had to explain every parking ticket, traffic ticket, everything that's ever happened in my life of, 50 plus years. And then, my wife's family, their friends, everything is fair game for the Nevada Gaming Commission. So
it's
interesting.
Like joining the FBI.
Yeah, I don't think they get vetted as hard at the FBI. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that's an entirely separate episode too. But let's get back to moving forward in the gaming industry. And obviously we're seeing more and more technology, more and more items over the next few years, like sports betting, are going to be allowed and regulated in different places. And so we'll see more and more of it. And actually, this is a perfect segue to it. Like you were just saying, now you've got games on the floor that aren't just, games of luck. Now they're games of skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that would help attract a younger person into a casino.
Right.
And that's probably the direction things are going to be going. I mean, are you guys exploring things like virtual reality or linking maybe machines that are skill-based to allow, multiple people to come in with your friends, and instead of, going to an arcade, which don't really exist anymore, instead of going to a ball game with your friends, now your 20-somethings will come and, sit down and all in a row and play a driving game against each other and for a chance to win money.
Yeah, I think all of that is in the future at some point. I think one of the things to note, though, when we talk about attracting a younger audience, the younger audience, from my perspective, it's not really who the casinos are best going after as far as as a customer. I think what I described earlier, when you're talking about, we were all young once, and as we age differently than maybe our baby boomer parents did or whoever, and they're still attracted to the kind of the old school slot machine, table game, whatever. But those of us who were young and are now moving into where we have disposable income per se, and we're in that sweet spot of a casino customer. It's like 35 plus, 45 plus. That's the customer that has money that they can use on entertainment. When you're kind of in your 20s, you're not really thinking about like, oh, I'd love to go to a casino with $1,000 and have fun. Because you're like, no, that $1,000, I had to pay my student loan. Yeah. I gotta get my rent. I'm hopefully going to buy my girlfriend a diamond ring and get married. So those are the things that the 20-somethings are thinking about. I don't think that's necessarily the audience that we want to focus on, because it would not really bear a lot of fruit. But we do target that gamer in the 40-plus demo with some of this new technology. Mm-hmm. Because that person is a lot younger today than maybe a 40-year-old was in the 70s, mm-hmm. you know? And I look at my grandpa, I see pictures of him when he was 40, and I'm like, God, he looks 80. So, you know, the today's more youthful consumer, even in their 40s and 50s, is looking for a little more of that kind of excitement that we're talking about. But the way places like Las Vegas or destination locations like that are attracting a younger adult with some disposable income is more through the nightlife side. It's not on the casino side. It's like clubs and concerts and events and festivals and, you know, now esports and things like that. Those have their own revenue streams. And I think that's one of the interesting things that's evolved in my career is initially, if you wanted, everything was focused on gaming. For example, in Northern Nevada, we didn't want anything to do with people who skied or outdoorsy people. Like, we wouldn't put them in our hotel because that was a waste of time. Mm. They never really figured out a way to tap into that revenue stream until California and all these other states got gaming, and suddenly Reno and Tahoe are going, wait a minute, all of our customers stopped coming because now they go to the casino that's in their own backyard, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So then we said, well, how do we get customers? We need to fill the hotel. Suddenly the hotel mattered. We were used to comping the show, comping the hotel, comping the dinners, and getting the money on the casino floor. Mm-hmm. Today, we actually look at it a little differently if we're working in that environment. We say, well, how do we get a customer to spend money? I don't really care if it's on the casino floor. if they'll pay $12 or $14 for a hamburger and I'm a resort, I'm going to get the $14 right. that way. And I'm going to get $20 for a cover charge to get into my club. I'm going to get $1,000 for a bottle of Sky Vodka on the nightclub floor, because mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a VIP experience that is 99% profit. Yeah. And actually, those clubs now, if you go to Vegas, every single strip casino has their own club. They're making mm-hmm. as much or more money from that customer in really? The club and food and beverage than they ever will on the slot floor. Yeah. So I think that is the interesting thing now, where you have all these choices as a consumer. When going to Vegas, I don't have to be a gambler now. There is so much for me to do yep. that I may never touch a slot machine. Mm-hmm. But the casino, believe me, they're going to make their money. They're going to get $350 for the hotel room. They're going to get, you know, $300 from food and beverage a night from you, and you know you're gonna still spend $1,000.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a $1.99 hot dog buffet anymore. It's exactly. Wolfgang Puck, and it's yeah, it's all of that stuff.
Yeah, no, the last couple of times that I've been to Vegas have been for a show and to go to a specific restaurant.
Right,
and we would play a couple as we walked across the floor, but yep. the vast majority of the money that we were spending
right.
was at all of the other stuff to do there, and it can be a bit overwhelming in a place like Vegas, and. Because there's so many things to right. do, and there are so many clubs and so many shows, and that's what I actually enjoy about the Valley now, is that because I haven't been here for I guess maybe 10 years now, is that all of a sudden all of that stuff is in much more manageable bites
yeah.
in the facilities around here.
Yeah, I agree, and I think one of the things that's evolving in this industry, it's less about cutting each other's throats and trying to get the customer to play slots on my floor versus your floor, is really saying, well, you know, if I'm patient, you'll come by to see me. And, you know, if I'm a casino in Vegas, I might have a great show. I might have a magic show, or I might have Celine Dion, and you're going to come make a trip specifically to see that. It's that big of an entertainment option. And then I'm down the street going, well, you know, I'd love you to come see my Sharks. So you'll next trip, you'll come see my Sharks. And the next trip after that, you might go ride in the big new Ferris wheel that's, you know, like a party Ferris wheel, or there's just so many different options that I think they've all started to realize, hey, if we work together and just get people here, mm-hmm. they're going to make the rounds. And now Vegas is not a once every 5 year destination. It's like a once or twice a year destination for a lot of people nationwide. So I really like that direction, because as not a gambler myself, I love to go to Vegas and first of all, it's kind of ironic, but I go there to cool off because it's so hot here. Now, you know, Vegas seems cooler by comparison, but it's also a place to go and do almost anything without having to go all the way to the other place that you would find that exact same thing. They have everything. They have Paris, right? They have Paris in true. Vegas. They have Venice in Vegas. They have, you know, you can jump off the top of a building on a bungee jump. You don't have to go to the Royal Gorge for that anymore. Like, they have everything in one location. I think that's one of the coolest things about this industry is after 32 and a half years, I'm still excited by it. I love that it's evolving to something more than just slot machines. I love that the future is technology-based and exciting for all kinds of demographics of people of different ethnicities and, you know, genders and ages. There's so much for everybody. It's just been fun. And at the end of the day, everybody is taken care of and gets entertained. And then on the employee side, people build careers and lives off of the fun of entertainment. And I just love that.
You know, kind of wrapping up our discussion about some of the innovations, some of the ways that casinos are moving into the future. Thinking to those times when you've been in Vegas, A, when you walk through those casinos, are you constantly keeping an eye out? Oh, it looks interesting. What maybe could we have here? And B, from Augustine's perspective, what is the next major innovation or what kind of things are you looking for to bring in for the customers in the near future?
Yeah, I think I look at almost every business I go into. I look at customer service, first of all, more than anything else. The experience that a business, whether it's a restaurant, a store, a casino, a hotel, offers a customer. And I just look at how it's being delivered and what makes it special if it is, and how are they failing if they are. Mm. And typically, more often than not, they're missing the mark. And I think it's something that a lot of people don't understand is like, really delivering on a promise that you make. When you advertise great service or experience, you have to deliver on it because that customer will not come back. If you've overpromised and underdelivered, that's a recipe for disaster. So I always look at that and make sure that at our business, at Augustine, we're really underpromising and overdelivering. Mm-hmm. You know, I think who we are, we look in the mirror every day and we say, what are we? We're a locals place. What do locals expect? They expect us to know them. They expect us to treat them well. They expect us to treat them almost like family or, you know, very close friends at the very least. So that's really what we deliver. And I think we hear it over and over. The other piece of that is what's the value proposition? We're saying you won't get a meal this good for this cheap anywhere else, for this low of a price. And so, for example, our lobster buffet, you can have all the lobster you can eat, all the lobster you can enjoy for $37. And if you're a player that has reached a couple of our top tiers, you'll get it for $34.95, and you will eat $100 worth of food for $34.95. That's a value. And we continue to deliver that. We've delivered it for 18 years at Augustine. It's literally who we are. So people know that about us. And once they know that about you, then you can't really deviate from it. You can't say, well, you know, now it's $60.
Right.
Sorry. You told us it was 37. You got to give us.
Places do that though. Sometimes
they do. They do. Not Augustine. We won't. I think the future, for us is to, first of all, we stay true to who we are, but I think that there's more coming with the Augustine tribe that will make the reservation where we're located, the land where we're located, even more exciting than it is today with other things to do. I don't expect the casino to expand with a hotel or anything like that. But I think there will be other forms of entertainment coming that will be tied to who we are at Augustine Casino. And I think it's going to be very exciting. And I think in the next 10 years, when you show up at our place, it's going to be a completely different experience and it's going to be really cool.
Well, Jeff, that's all we have time for on this episode of the show, but don't worry, we'll be back again with another episode taking you inside the world of casino and gaming on The Gaming Guru, sponsored by Augustine Casino. If you want to find out more about Jeff and what he's doing at Augustine, you can check them out at augustinecasino.com. We'll see you next time on The Gaming Guru.